engineer by training, and so I'm gonna talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts of how we put this system together and a few of our findings and some take-home messages. I did notice as I was preparing my talk that I really should have put a couple more words in the title, because I am just going to talk about corn here today. And certainly it's a team effort, and my colleagues there on the talk have done a lot of the work along with me. So what I'd like to do in this presentation is try to help go through a few questions. Why do we like using the reflectance sensor approach for nitrogen management? How can we implement that approach? Give you just a few results from some of our work in Missouri, and then some additional considerations, things to think about or take-home messages that we have come up with over time. So let's get into the first part, and why reflectance sensing? And you know, different people could come up with a different list, but the things that are on my list are timing, addressing temporal and spatial variability, and automation. You know, if we think about timing, and Dr. Shepherds, thank you for this this nice image that you didn't know you gave me, but I appreciate it anyway. You know, we're talking about with the sensors going out there at about V7 to V10, and so we're in that period of maximum uptake, and so we can synchronize the application of the nitrogen to the time that the plant needs it. Temporal variability. Certainly we get variations in rainfall patterns and other things related to climate from year to year, and so with these sensors, since we're going to assess the crop in the middle of the growing season, if we've had a wet spring and maybe we've lost more nitrogen, because of that we can address that. And you know, sort of as this map shows, especially in the lower parts of the Corn Belt, there are lots of years that we can get a lot of rain in the springtime. Spatial variability, of course, is another thing that we can address with these sensors. This is a field study that we did a few years ago in this particular field is in southeast Missouri, but we did a number of fields around Missouri, and looked at generating economically optimal in-rate functions for various places in these fields. And so what we found, really the take-home message there, was almost a third of the fields that we looked at had variation in EONR of greater than 100 pounds of N to the acre. And so with these sensors, we can go out and assess this and try to take care of some of that spatial variability. And then another thing, and of course with my background, this is one of the things that I like, the being able to automate using the plant-based sensing, and the chlorophyll meter was, you know, one of the early ways of doing this kind of sensing, and that's not too easy to automate. Even the folks at Nebraska seems like they have to, you must not have had graduate students that year, Jim, because I thought you always sent them out to the field to do that. That was, oh, a picture opportunity. Okay, gotcha. All right. So anyway, that, you know, gives some good benchmark information. But then if we go to remote sensing, like we heard about before lunch, for those of you that were here, or then to some of these proximal sensors, things that we put on vehicles and traverse the field, and the passive sensors, the ones that rely on the sunlight to basically illuminate the scene, have been around for a long time. And of course, the newer ones, and what we're going to focus on here today, are these active light source sensors, the ones that have an internal light source within them. So that was the background. Why might we want to do this? Now, how can we? Hello. Hey, that's pretty good. How can we implement this approach? And there are several parts of this that we're going to talk about here this afternoon. The sensors, the system that takes the information from the sensors and does something with it, and then part of that is the algorithm, and then the hardware that you need to actually put the fertilizer product on the ground. These active reflectance sensors, as many of you are aware, use an internal light source, and the reason for this is to be able to get a consistent illumination and try to eliminate or at least minimize the problems that you get when sunlight varies due to sun angle, cloud moving across the sun, or whatever. There are two sensors that are commercially available right now, and in our work we did assessments with both of those. The Green Seeker by Intech, which is this one that you see here, and then the Crop Circle by Holland Scientific is this smaller one. And in general, they both work in a very similar manner, and that is that they have a light source up here. You have light shining down on the surface down below, which may be a mixture of soil and crop, whatever. That some portion of that is reflected back to the detector. And the electronics in these things are such that it makes them relatively insensitive and hopefully completely insensitive to the sunlight variations, and so they're only measuring the reflectance that's caused by that internal light that's generated. This is the light pattern from the Green Seeker sensor. You can just make out the outline of the sensor there on the screen, but it's a red light, and you can see it's a wide narrow band. The Crop Circle sensor has a little bit different configuration. It's an amber light as opposed to red, and it's a series of spots as opposed to a continuous line. It's a little bit different geometry, but similar concept. And what do we get out of these sensors? What output do they have? Well, both sensors are taking measurements on two channels. One is a visible light, the red or the amber, and the other is near-infrared light. And so then from that, you can generate these indices, either a ratio index, which is just dividing the one channel by the other, or something like the NDVI, some kind of vegetation index. Different folks use different ones of these in their work. In Missouri, we've used the ratio data as opposed to the NDVI. Now, when you apply these sensors, one thing that's important, as we heard from Larry Hendrickson before lunch, is to have a non-nitrogen limiting reference area, either a strip or some kind of an area within the field that gives you an indication of what the corn would look like without nitrogen stress. And so you have to go in and do some application to some part of the field there. Then when it comes time to go out and actually do your sensor measurements, the first thing that you have to do is collect your reference data and then somehow take that data and create a whole field reference. Now, some approaches just take a single number for that reference, and then, of course, creating a reference map for the field is trivial. It's the same thing everywhere. One of the things that we've been working with is not having the reference the same everywhere in the field, and is that a better way to go? This is some data that is multiple reference strips within a field, and you can certainly see that there's some kind of a spatial pattern going on here that suggests maybe with differences in soil type or something, maybe we want to think about different references in different places in the field. So that's one potential approach. Once we have that reference, then we can go out and with our system that has some number of sensors on it, we get some sensor information, we have the reference value, and those go together then into our algorithm, our equation that tells us, given a certain set of sensor data, what do we do as far as what kind of nitrogen rate we want to put out. And there may be some filtering and so on in there. And then it goes out to the application system that we'll talk about later. But first, this. What about that algorithm? That's sort of a key to the whole system. And there are algorithms all over the place. Different research groups have taken different approaches in looking at data that they have collected and figuring out how to do these. There's ongoing work. Bill Ron and Jim Shepherds got a group together a few years ago to look at how all of this could come together across the first across the Midwest, and maybe now across a broader area than that. And there's testing of these algorithms and so on, but that's an important part, certainly, of the overall picture. Can we get to a common algorithm? Should we be trying? That's another subject of discussion. So, the algorithm is important right now, and this is a little busy, but this is the Missouri algorithm, which has it's basically the same structure but has different constants in it depending upon which sensor we have, the crop circle or the green seeker, and what corn growth stage we have, either V6 to V7 or V8 to V10. And this is a little busy, but maybe you can see a little bit better graphically how that works. And down on the x-axis is the ratio, and that is the visible to NIR ratio from the target, the corn we're looking at to see what nitrogen rate we want to put on it, divided by the ratio here of the reference area. And basically, we have a ramp type of function with a little bit different slope depending upon which sensor you have, because numerically they do give you a little bit different numbers, and also which crop stage that you have. And if any of you saw Peter Scarf talking yesterday afternoon, he talked about how the genesis of our algorithm came from some small plot work that he did several years ago with passive radiometers. So we've got sensors, we've got a system, we've got an algorithm, and what are we going to do? Does that cause confusion? And I don't know who that looks like there, but we'll leave it to the audience to think about. Bill, raise your one eyebrow up there. Does that? Yeah, there you go. Okay. Well, there are integrated systems out there that that you can buy and use, and Intech makes such a system that has a computer, it has the sensors, and so you just need to plug it into your rate controller that's on your application vehicle. The algorithms, and they have different algorithms from the different states built into this. The Crop Circle folks also have a very similar setup where they have a controller and then are able to send an output to your Rawson or Raven controller. So the implementation, the solution there is there to be able to do some of these things. What about hardware? How do we go and put the product on the field? Well, certainly you can go with dry, you can go with fluid, you can go with anhydrous. But there's a little bit of a caution there, and that's because not all application hardware can give that range of variation that you really need to implement. This algorithm, it's between a 3-to-1 and a 4-to-1 variation from high to low. And a lot of control systems that are out there aren't designed to do that. And so you have to be a little bit careful if you want to do a really good job with this. There are some commercial options out there that are set up to be able to get that wide range of application rates. And another approach that we've used and other folks have used too is sort of a binary nozzle concept where you have three different valve manifolds. And so you set up a series of orifices that give you one rate, two times that rate, four times that rate, and then by turning those booms on and off, you can go up in increments. And the way we have it set up, we can go anywhere from 30 pounds of N up to 210 pounds of N to the acre. And so that's another alternative way of doing this application. The nice thing about this one is that you can get those rate changes almost instantaneously, as opposed to a number of the other systems where there's quite a bit of a time ramp going from one rate to the other. So That's a little bit of the how we can do it. Now, just briefly, some results that we've seen on our work. You can see here a table that shows the number of field scale studies we've had over the last 4 years in Missouri. And Peter Scarf gave a summary of these results yesterday afternoon. I'm just going to focus on the first line here, the spray coop studies, and in particular, I'm going to look at the 2006 data. We had a drought in 05 and didn't get very good information. 04 was about a wash. Our sensor-controlled experiments did about the same as the producer rates. But we did have a field-scale study there with strips, and we had four treatments. Basically, we had producer rate at emergence. We had a producer rate at side dress, that is to time it at the same time as we used the sensors. We had the sensor completely sensor controlled using the algorithm. And then we had a split treatment where we put down approximately one third of the producer rate at planting and then came back with the sensor. Our producers get really anxious if you tell them that you don't want them to put on any nitrogen at planting time. And so this was a compromise to that. So, you know, just in general, you can see the nitrogen rates and the average yields. We did put on less in with the sensor studies and, well, higher yield, maybe. I think that was statistically significant, but obviously it's not a big change. But we did have about a $25 per acre benefit in this year. As I said, the other year that we've analyzed and had pretty good data from was pretty much a wash. So if you average those two together, you get that, you know, in the $10 or $15 per acre benefit that Peter Scarf, I think, mentioned yesterday in his talk. So that's where we are, and it, you know, so that looks sort of promising. But what are some other considerations as we've gone through and we've done this work? One thing that's, you know, the environmental issues and environmental benefits. Missouri NRCS has this year offered $60 per acre incentive for producers to sign up and do in-field crop canopy sensing for nitrogen application. So NRCS in Missouri, and I think that's the only state that's doing this, sees the benefit and is offering incentives to producers. What do we need to, where is this technology most suited? And I'm just going to throw up a list here. Now, basically, fields that are variable and climate conditions where you may have lost nitrogen. That's really the bottom line. And so that's just a list, and we've got that in another form. If anyone's interested, I can show it to you. Some things to think about. Technical aptitude is obviously required to do this on the part of the farmer or the service provider or whoever's doing it. You have to have the right hardware. There is a relatively narrow window for application, and if you have soils like we do that have a lot of clay and they get wet and they stay wet, that's an issue. How do you balance between that early season end need and not putting too much in on for still being able to detect stress? The suitability of the reference strip or a single reference for a large field, I mentioned that. What about the algorithm? And how many and which type of sensor should we be using? So there's some things to think about and things that many folks in this room are working on in research, but you know, it's a promising kind of technology, and look forward to seeing where it goes. And with that, I'll end my presentation. Thank you.
Any questions for Dr. Sutton?
Tom?
What was the scale of application with this device? I mean, in other words, how finely and how small an area can you treat until
okay.
You have to switch to the next?
Right. Our research applicator, we were putting on six rows at a time, so it's 15 feet wide. And our, you know, we had very fast response going from one rate to another. It was on the order of a second, second and a half. And so, you know, you're going, it's probably about a square there. It's probably another 15 feet going down the row at the speeds we were going.
Any more questions?
No?
Okay, thank you.
Our speaker.